including ocean-bound plastic. It's windproof, waterproof, and designed to handle severe cold weather, all while being free of toxic...
I'm Elsa Levasseur, and I'm a sustaining member, and I give monthly on the internet. It's so easy to listen to WGXC Accra.
Waveforms WGXC always needs computer donations. If you have one you don't need, and it is a Macintosh 2019 or newer, please email info@wgxc.org for more information. Thank you for your contribution.
Waveforms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Timothy Simmons of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
La despensa de alimentos de Catskill está localizada en la parroquia de la Iglesia de St. Luke en Catskill, en la calle William, número 50. La despensa está abierta todos los viernes de la 1 hasta las 4 de la tarde. La comida sana es un derecho. Para más información, bienvenidos a todos a venir. Llamar por teléfono a 551-299-2456. Mirar la página web catskillfoodpantry.org o conectar con nosotros en Facebook en Catskill Food Pantry.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, August 22nd. Local early morning temperatures range from 49 degrees in Medusa to 53 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 65 degrees. Air quality will be good, pollen levels will be high. Today is looking pretty nice. It will be sunny with a high of 79 at 4 p.m. Overnight, temperatures dip to 57 degrees. Saturday will have a high of 83 that will linger most of the afternoon. Overnight, temperatures dip to 65 degrees, then bounce right back up, hitting 78 in the afternoon on Sunday. Rain chances show up in the morning and will get stronger in the afternoon. And they will last all night and then all day on Monday, where we see a high of 78. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 2:45 a.m., low tide at 9:33 a.m., high tide again at 3:16 p.m., then low tide once again at 9:37 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 80 degrees and the tide strength is high. Sunset today will be at 7:34 p.m., sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:07 a.m. Looking way up, we see plasma winds will be average at 532 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently being lightly impacted above 18 megahertz with an S2 level noise floor. There are no chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 76, and this has been the better weather brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. The Trump administration is rolling back policies and programs designed to reduce climate warming pollution and protect vulnerable communities from the impacts of climate change.
We're seeing this big vacuum and actually like counterproductive action from the federal government.
But Sylvia Chi of Just Solutions, a national climate justice group, says states can still help protect people. For example, states can pass laws that limit industrial development in areas overburdened by fossil fuel pollution, or that accelerate the transition to clean energy.
Like renewable portfolio standards, clean energy standards, those are things that states can still pursue and can get more ambitious about.
Some states have also passed climate Superfund laws. These laws require fossil fuel companies to contribute to a fund that helps the state adapt to extreme weather and other climate impacts.
To hold polluters accountable for the climate pollution that they've caused and the effects on those states.
She says depending on the state, some solutions will be more politically possible than others. But there are many ways for states to take action to reduce climate pollution and protect people from the harms caused by the burning of fossil fuels. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
90.7 FM.
Acre, Hudson, Catskill.
You're listening to WGXC Acre, 90.7 FM. This is Simone Stevens on the Friday Afternoon Show. And I am so excited to welcome Michelle Steinwald, the guest curator of the Katzbahn Annual Festival. This is super exciting. It takes place from August 30th to September 27th. And I cannot believe, just in my looking at the website and all of the stuff they have planned, the breadth of what occurs during this time period. So welcome, Michelle.
Thank you for having me, Simone. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, so excited to have you. So before we get into how you got in touch with Katzbahn and how you became to be guest curator and what your role is as such, can we tell the listeners who aren't even familiar with the festival just what it is?
Absolutely. For sure. It's really exciting. Katzbahn Cultural Park is this beautiful natural spaces with an incredible performing arts residency. And so there's these great buildings and outdoor spaces for artists, performing artists, literature, drawing, sculpture, all of that to come and to research, develop, and imagine what their new works will be. And so the festival then gets to profit from all that creativity that happens on site, and we open it up to the public.
Wow. So this is not, I had no idea. So it's not performances of literature, visual art exhibitions that have happened elsewhere and then are brought to the Katzbahn. They're literally artist residencies taking place, and this is the culmination of their work that the public finally gets to see. So how long are the art, is it, does it differ from artist to artist how long they are in the Hudson Valley?
Yes. Some will be on site for 3 weeks, some 2 weeks, some a week leading up to, and these are works that are on the verge of premiering. And so they are fully developed, and it's the moment where audiences get to experience them before the final production happens. And so it is not a works in process. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to think that they're seeing something that isn't that is still kind of a sketch of an idea. These are fully formed. But as you said, the exciting part is these are being made at Katzbahn for the festival and for these audiences. So the audiences is key to the success of these works.
Mm-hmm. And also it's inextricable, right? The environment and the landscape, the part that is played for the artist in the creation of their piece is combined with the people who live here and get to experience it. That's kind of almost part of the art itself.
Completely. And, you know, when I think of performance or any kind of artistic engagement, it really is about connection and community. And so that's part of my curatorial practice is to really think about who's in the communities, who's coming, what are those audience behaviors, what are our partners in the region, so that we can build off of each other's efforts and then thinking about the artists that are at a point in their development of a certain work that this is just the right timing.
Mm-hmm. I also think as a creative myself, the experiencing the pressure of making something, no matter the medium, and doing it sort of in between normal life and regular life, squeezing it in between all of the other things, and having it sort of be affected by normal life too, the normal day, everyday trappings, right? And the idea to be able to go away and be in an entirely different place, with that being the sole purpose, to focus on what I'm creating, and the support that one I bet feels when they're in this process from Katzbahn. How that affects the actual art itself, right?
Yes. We all need
room to breathe.
Yeah, we need that space. We need that protected space, because our day-to-day does fill up really quickly when we're at home. So to be at a retreat is necessary to really have each of the artworks grow, and for them to take up that space, the artworks themselves, and the artists to have that time to settle into the works. And at the same time, deadlines are so helpful. I know for myself, a deadline really adds a little fire. Yes. So the added benefit of knowing an audience is coming, then that culmination becomes magic.
Yeah. And there is something, even though these are fully finished, realized works, and in many different mediums, I can't wait to get into that, because it is also rare where you have a festival that really has such a depth and breadth of mediums all coexisting, but it's just so, there's something raw about that moment when something is first revealed, that might not be there down the line, right? It might be some beautiful wrinkle that gets ironed out for whatever reason.
Yeah, that vulnerability that happens with the excitement and the raw, the freshness, the trying, right? Mm-hmm. It's so human to try.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
And we feel that in the audience, the stakes are higher.
Yeah.
The stakes are higher. So being in the audience, you really feel your investment is valued.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you are based in
Montreal. So yes, I am half Quebecois and half American, and I spent most of my career working in the United States, and have recently come back to the areas that my ancestors first came to, and the lands. So I am just really thrilled to be coming to the Hudson Valley. I live in Montreal now, but half my family is in Buffalo in Western New York. And so Tivoli feels like the perfect middle point to be doing this work, to be in community and in partnership with other arts organizations in the region.
And how did you get involved with Katzbahn? How did you connect?
The new managing director, Naomi Miller, she had heard about my work and reached out, and we just started a conversation, and it grew kind of organically from there. It was rather quick at the same time, because a season, a festival can take 2 to 3 years to plan, and I had 3 months to put it together, because once things are decided, then there's a little bit more time to prepare. But those initial decisions, reaching out to artists, and I have connections in different artistic fields, so I was able to draw on that knowledge. I spend a lot of time also reviewing grants, so that gives me a lot of research and insight into what is being worked on in the field So while I had seen some artists, I'd been following some artists, I also was being introduced to artists because of their grant proposal requests. And that's part of being in the field, is you do all this research and you find those connections in all the work you do.
Wow. And can you talk a little bit about your work? You said she was familiar with your work. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I started as a dancer choreographer, and I like to think about my early beginnings in my parents' living room as a preteen, dancing to Duran Duran and Sinead O'Connor, and just imagining how they just would have felt my creative talents from a distance, and invite me on to be the choreographer for their world tours. So
of
I was,
course.
Thank you. I was smitten with dance, and I felt it in my bones, and was always very expressive and maybe not quite so technical. And so I grew as an artist by training in Montreal and then training in Europe, in the Netherlands, and then getting work in Brussels, and really being influenced by kind of the convergence of different cultural influences in Brussels at that time in the mid-90s, and really being inspired by the combination of theater, movement, spoken word, installations. Like, in dance was so broad at that time. And, you know, we see it a lot in theater, devised theater, where everybody gets to contribute to the final production. And I was seeing that in dance for the first time, where there's more hierarchy in what I was seeing in Montreal at the time, or dance productions that were touring up to Canada through that were US based. Mm-hmm. And so my mind was blown. I was really seeing all this creativity and growing from there. And then coming back to Canada, I was critical of the structures, the administrative structures that were in some ways boxing up artists and their aesthetics into packages. I felt it was very tidy. Whereas when I was in Europe, I felt everything was permissible. And I started to also follow American choreographers at that time as well. So then seeing a little bit of lineage, historical dance lineage coming into downtown dance in New York. And anyway, so it all became a big soup and excitement. Mm-hmm. I also saw how government structures, funding structures were also limiting, and how they could be improved upon to create more freedom artistically. So my curatorial history really started in wanting to disrupt the system. Mm. So I came back to Canada and then eventually moved to Seattle and worked at On the Boards, which is an experimental performance venue in Seattle, Washington, with a great legacy. And so I was able to work there and start to push against programming structures and seeing how that influenced audience behaviors.
Wow. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? If you're just joining us, we're talking to Michelle Steinwald, who is the guest curator of the Katzbahn Annual Festival. I mean, that's so interesting, just how that structure might, that's just such a, that really made me go, wait, what? Stop there.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that. skimming past that. It was, at the time, there wasn't any kind of curatorial school, right? Like you just kind of were passionate about the art forms and learned on the job and reflected as you were doing it. And so there was a program that I was producing called 12 Minutes Max, mm-hmm. where every month 14 acts could audition for a piece that could not be more than 12 minutes.
And this was multi-medium, like it could be
multidisciplinary,
dance, it could be, okay.
Yeah, and it was a small space, and so it rarely was large ensemble works. It was kind of more of a jewel box theater with 90 seats. And so I was able to, so I inherited that program. I started running it and it already had a structure. So 14 auditioned, 7 got into the show, and the show was a month later. And we had 2 shows. It was always a great audience. So the audience had a great appetite for seeing new work. Sometimes it was an established artist that was trying something new, so just a little test. Sometimes it was somebody coming into the community for the first time, and it was their introduction to showing their work in public. And so or new collaborations. It really was a testing ground for new works. And the audience knew if they didn't like it, it was only 12 minutes. Right. So we were all very patient and also, you know, very present with the work. And the structure of that program had, while I was producing it, we would choose 2 curators who were also artists locally. And they, it was their selection. So not only some, you know, would an audience come because they were excited about who was on in the lineup for the evening, but also who had made the decisions. So all of that rotated every month. And so I ran that program for 5.5 years, and monthly I would see how somebody's choices lined up, you know, without an audience during the audition. I could see how they had made those decisions and how they put the order of the show together. And then I would see it a month later with an audience.
Wow.
And so it became a laboratory for me to see what lands, what needed different support, whether it was in the order of the show, if it was, you know, I have a lot of memories from that time because I really took it as a research moment for me to, because I didn't have curatorial decision-making at that time. I was just watching other people make decisions. I would help if I felt technically that was too big of a set to switch over in the middle of the show. Can we do it at the top of the show? Can we do it at the top of the intermission, at the beginning of, you know, each, so that the crew had a moment to set it up without the pressure of the audience watching. So, you know, there were some technical things that would help with the curators decide, but otherwise they got to make decisions. And secretly on the side during the audition process, I would watch and I would make my own decisions. And sometimes they were similar and sometimes absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And so my instincts were being challenged. And while I was watching what had happened with somebody else's decision making. So I really got to see how audiences can be prepped for difficult work. Wow. Or can be disoriented. And sometimes that disorientation adds spice. Mm-hmm. And it actually does prepare an audience to receive the work in a much more authentic way if it is a little jarring, and at the same time, where there's moments where you need to ease into a work. So I really became attuned to what audiences, how they receive, and the order, and these were short works, so I could, yeah, kind of that collage of all those works.
So that's so interesting that you say prepping an audience for more challenging works or that might present an emotional reaction for certain people. And so do you mean in the lineup of how pieces, like having something softer as an entrance or alluding to, or that's such an interesting, because in a way that's almost like a full length film when you think about having these moments that prep the person for the climax or the more challenging moments. I also love that they would switch out who made the decisions on out of the 14 applicants, because having one person always decide that every time, you're going to run into a pattern that might not suit everybody walking in through those doors to see.
Yeah, exactly. Funny. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there was really the only thing that I had that was available, and maybe you relate to this, is like you always put your strongest piece at the top of the show and then the last piece of the night, right? Like you start with your strongest and you end with your strongest, right? Because in the middle, the audience may forget, right? And so that was pretty much the whole curatorial history I got was, wow. You know, start with your strongest and end with your
the points,
right? And I started to challenge that because often an audience needs some time to settle in, mm-hmm. right? And so is there something in the structure of the piece itself, not looking at the piece as a whole, but is there kind of a ramping up that comes in the piece that could ease the audience into settling in to experience mm-hmm. an evening of short works?
I think it's super, super exciting too, because I recently, you know, there's at the Park Theater, there's a theater company up here who just did a performance called Pieces, and it was all like short plays. It was 7 short plays. And there is something being sort of 7 very different worlds within the space of an hour and a half.
Right.
That is really thrilling. because the worlds were so different, different personalities, different writing styles, comedy, drama, right? Magical realism, realism.
That journey that you're talking about with what you experienced, yeah, I'm starting to see the graph of not just the content of the work, but then what mood and tones that leaves in the room, right? Because when you're leaving an audience, do you want them to linger with what they've just experienced or kind of wrap it up with a bow and have a sense of completion?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, how tidy are those edges of the experience so that you can feel really clear about, I started here, I ended there, I can kind of box that experience, and that tidiness can be really satisfying. Mm-hmm. And we're living in a world where everything is very mixed up. And, you know, it's no longer binary. There's no right and wrong. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to grapple with multiple realities. And so performance can also have that sense of like settling and lingering and
resolution.
Yeah. Let it kind of absorb in waves. And so what happens together in the experience of seeing live art may also have kind of an echo later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also with how divisive these times appear to be, if I may say so, I don't know what, right? These are divisive times, I'm not, but it would say, but many people say that I find it to be so. I've found this renewed sense of, dare I say, healing, being able to be in a room with a bunch of people that might have very different opinions than me.
Yeah.
That if we were left alone in a room together, we might start raising our voices at one point. I don't know. But we're all in the same room together, being silent, taking in somebody else's story, right? Mm-hmm. That becomes almost more important than our own. And it kind of becomes collectively all of ours. And I have found that as somebody who has artistic parents and at times has rebelled against that, said, I'm going to be a dentist, you know, feeling like I want to be as far away from art as possible. I have this renewed, and I've always appreciated it and taken part in it as a musician and a voice actor, but I have a renewed, especially in the past couple of years, a renewed appreciation for the artistic process and the sharing of that process with a room of others, whether it is an outside site specific piece or inside a black box theater, you know?
Yeah. Yes, it is healing. I think you can use that word absolutely, right? There are less moments where we gather and so in person. And so to have a collective experience is like none other. And so that is precious, and it's not exclusionary. It's, and I'm doing, I'm working with partners and the staff and listening to those lands so that we can gather together respectfully and responsibly. And so that is a big consideration for the festival, is how we gather.
Yeah.
And so, healing is definitely a big part of it. We need to take this time. We need to take this time to be in community with one another. Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to mention is just when I first was invited to guest curate, I reached out to my colleagues in the region, because I don't live there. I wanted to understand their experiences, audience behaviors. And what I learned from my colleagues, who so generously shared their experiences, was how adventurous the audiences are in the Hudson Valley. And so while there is such a multitude of opportunities to see work in the Hudson Valley, they gave me the confidence to introduce artists that are of this time.
Mm-hmm.
And there are multiple generations. There are younger choreographers. There are national treasures as also in the lineup. It just is incredible to be able to have the space, the time, the flexibility because of those spaces. As you say, we are, some of the shows are outside, some of them are inside, some of them are installations, so you get to walk through them and be immersed in a world, and others are much tidier and you sit in your seat and you get to see some films and talk to the artists afterwards, and the space fills with the artwork. And then other times you get to choose. So we have two audio experiences. We're calling it the Performance Lending Library. You come with your earphones, your streaming devices, whether it's your phone, your iPad, as long as you have data, you can access these two audio recordings. One is radio play that was created during the pandemic. And so it really opens up your imagination to be really expansive at a time when most of us had to shelter in place. Mm-hmm. And so having your mind expanded through the audio guided experience they're part of the invitation is to be very physical and aerobic in a small space. You can do this outside. So we're adapting it to an outside experience, and you can be alongside a tree. We also have a visual arts exhibition happening at the same time. You can be responding to a sculpture at the same time or skipping through one of the fields. Yeah, I'm super excited about that freedom.
It's the best example of multitasking that I've ever heard.
Yeah, thanks. And then the other audio experience is part of a larger work called Resisting Extinction. And the artist Body Cartography Project, they are looking at climate crisis and what will happen to our bodies as climate creates conditions that we can no longer inhabit this world. And so it is a dying and decomposing practice. So it's a whole internal choreography that you are being guided through with this headset. And so you are lying anywhere you want, under a tree, open field, again, nestled next to a sculpture to understand how the body is supporting vitality.
Wow, that is so visceral and so immersive.
Yeah, you get to choose, you know, so some of them are, you know, very social experiences, going to the porch, hearing the storytellers, coming to a film night, coming to a performance, you know, the concerts out, we're doing this culminating concert with Lori Goldstein, and she's bringing Melanie Dyer and Gwen Laster to do this incredible new composition for string trio. That's our culminating night, and that's outdoors. So I really am excited for all those, that sound and vibration to be experienced with an audience for the first time for Katzbahn. And at the same time, we have performances that that will ask you to bring yourself in, like Nicole Canuso, who's a choreographer from Philadelphia, is coming with this incredible team of artists, visual artists, researchers, and performers to create an environment almost like a guided exhibition. Like you've got a tour guide that's going to guide you through, only it's choreographed. So you have a dancer who's bringing you along through an exhibition that has been made to really bring all your senses into this choreographic experience, and how each other interacts with you, the performers, becomes the piece itself. And so, yeah, there's so many different layers of participation, I'm excited for everybody to be there and just to talk about it afterwards, right? Because I also am going to be participating and experiencing it multiple times. And so to hear how audiences are engaging in the work is going to be helpful.
Mm-hmm. I think it's so, I feel like that's on the rise. It would seem there's this like evolution of participatory experiences in theater and dance too. I can't speak for dance, but I'm noticing definitely sort of a trend in theater, more participation between the person on stage or the people on stage and the people in the audience.
Well, you know, thinking about TikTok, you had mentioned, right? You're seeing sometimes they're professional artists and sometimes they could be your neighbor, right? Putting themselves out there. And so more used to feeling that representation and feeling close to the artists that we're seeing on a small screen. Mm-hmm. So I also agree, you know, there's been a long history of participation, audience participation in performance works. And right now there's what I find with this lineup of artists is the sensitivity mm-hmm. around their medium, around us being present together, around being in nature at this time. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of sensitivity. And I like to think about how, I don't know if you know the work of Adrienne Marie Brown, Emergent Strategy, an artist and a writer and an organizer. And she talks about the conversation that can only happen with these people in this room at this time. And so, you know, she's talking about organizing, political organizing, and activism. But I've taken that notion of this moment in this room, in this conversation, only us at this time can have it. So it is precious, and it's also evolving. Mm-hmm. So we get to play. And that's really my excitement about being at Katzbahn, is we have this permeability between outdoor spaces, indoor spaces, the artists that are coming. And while like Bill T. Jones is in residence leading up and opening the festival, our big opening weekend is with Bill T. Jones and the Arnie Zane Company. And, you know, there's a lot of celebration with the works he's bringing, previous works, historical works that have deep resonance at this time. He will still be in residence the following week. We have Nicole Canuso. So we could be watching a new choreography by a younger artist at the same time as having, you know, a legend in the audience with us. And so I'm really hoping that ecology is also happening inside the studios, inside the performances, inside that all those influences are coming together. I'm my heart is really open. I'm really excited for all of it. I feel as a curator that I am an audience advocate, mm-hmm. right? Because I'm not influencing what's on stage. I'm trying to influence what is on stage or in concert or in the galleries is landing for an audience. And so I have to put myself in some ways, that's where my dance background serves me as a curator, that I have developed my understanding of my body in space and being able to be sensitive to other bodies in space and how we relate to one another. So I am looking for at that organic choreography of how people are engaging with the space, whether it's social or there's hesitation or there's some concern or there's just a real freedom of being able to meet the artwork and the art experiences on their own terms. And that's my goal, is that the artworks are able to take the space they need to be received on their own terms. And how do I respect and create environments that are consent-based. Because we have inherited, you know, buying a ticket, going to a seat, there's an expectation, something will be delivered, and contemporary forms blur all those boundaries of like when a performance start. It could have started before you arrived. And so you're intersecting an experience midpoint. And that is, then you start to feel the history, the buildup that came with the progression that lands as you arrive, right? That meeting that can only happen in real time. So yeah, all of that is being considered. It's my way of adding an embodied awareness to presenting all these new works. And they're so fresh. So there's also time for me, and it's why I'll be on site for the whole month, is to be alongside these works and to adjust how we invite people in at this special moment.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Michelle Steinwald, who is the guest curator of the Katzbahn Annual Festival. And we've talked about Montreal a little bit. I mean, Montreal is, right, the festival capital of the Mecca. I was telling you, mentioned to you earlier, I have major, you know, FOMO this year for July, because it was the convergence of the jazz festival, the African music festival, the comedy festival, the circus festival, right? I mean, I actually have a picture of me from years ago. After the circus festival, there was a tight, you know, a tightrope walker and dressed as an angel. And they unleashed, I think, like 1,000 pounds of feathers onto the people below them. And my boyfriend and I stayed after and watched all these guys' crew come in with leaf blowers to
gather all the feathers. If you want to keep them for next time, absolutely. Yeah,
Montreal covered in feathers. I mean, it was just so. Does that? How inspiring is that to live in a place that just is so appreciative and really just nurtures festivals and creativity?
Yeah, it's been a big influence in my life. I was raised in Canada and had regular access to the arts. And then when I settled in the United States and I was in Seattle working on a project and again, building partnerships, and I heard from a theater director, a venue director, that he just doesn't do dance anymore because nobody comes to it.
Wow.
And so his season no longer included dance. I saw that as our fault, right? Like, we're not doing our job, because I knew in Canada, audiences come to see dance. There are no barriers. There's no like, I don't like dance, or I won't see anything.
Right.
For the dance umbrella, right? Like, dance, no, I don't understand dance. So I knew that there is a place where dance thrives. And so while audiences can struggle in some places in the United States to see the relevance of going to see a dance performance, I knew that was an organizing problem. That was a branding problem. That was not dance's problem. That was not dance fading away as an art form. That and I love that this time, you know, that was 25 years ago, but it has become part of my life's mission is to make sure that spaces that support dance works are inviting, so that some of that societal hesitation around going to see a dance performance can be alleviated. We are in a dance renaissance, you know. Hollywood movies have more dance in them. Commercials have dance in them, right? Like, a lot of dance celebrities now, and choreographers are also getting their due around being awarded and credited for their work in different mediums And this is a moment of celebrating bodies and the diversity of bodies, and us coming together is part of that celebration.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting that when you said like an organizing problem, like it's do you think it was also the curation in the States of like what was, did it see? Because I think I'm guilty of not seeing a lot of dance and maybe thinking it was, there was something as a younger person that was a little highbrow, because it was always like ballet at the Met, you know, it was always sort of highbrow and fancy. And it felt like a little beyond my capability or my, and almost like I wasn't, I don't know, capable of understanding the complexity of dance. It just seemed a little highbrow for me as a younger person. I see more dance now, but is that what you mean by the organizing, the way we organized it?
I think of it more as a problem around, so this is the part around it being an organizing problem, right? You go see a sports event, you know the rules of the game, mm-hmm. you know what's at stake. You often know the stats on different athletes. you have that information going in, so you're invested already. You have the tools to appreciate this moment. Yeah. And a lot of classical dance forms, they can have, you know, whether it's ballet or Bharatanatyam, you'll have a narrative story behind it that is being pantomimed or, you know, hinted at through movement. And if you're not already immersed in that movement language, you're not going to pick up on those cues, and it doesn't feel good to feel left out.
Yeah. Wow.
Right. And so I think I, you know, I'm inspired by sports, and sometimes I think about how if we had sportscasters to be able to talk through a dance performance, and actually I'm going to stop myself because we do have that now. Like we do have in the dance world, because of access needs, we have more audio describers. And so I think that is, we are catching up to letting people into the worlds that are being created if language is helpful in supporting your experience engaging in that world.
Right. Otherwise, for some people, it's like watching a foreign film with no subtitles.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. No, that's the perfect analogy, right?
It's all, I have to say, I commend you, because this is no easy dance, pun intended, because I could imagine being, you're sort of this middle person where you're aware of the audience, but you're also, I can imagine, and I should just ask you, do you ever feel sort of protective of the performer, or the tension between if you feel like something is not landing with the audience, but you want to support and preserve an important vision of the performance? Because there is tension sometimes between performance artist and the audience, right?
Yeah, it's important to trust the artists and their vision. And sometimes that moment of friction is necessary for all of us to get on board, right? Like there's, it's like any kind of relationship. If you're in a relationship, personal relationship, and there's never any friction, there's never any stakes to really double down on why we're here together. Mm-hmm. Right. And creating that trust. It's, if everything went perfectly the whole time, you don't know if somebody's going to bail when things get tough. And we want to feel that commitment.
Yeah. But I think there's something very brave to be able to live in that moment of friction.
Yeah.
As a curator, as an audience member, as the person performing, there's something brave saying, hey, this is not easy, this moment, mm-hmm. that it's okay.
Absolutely. And we'll stay. Yeah. There will be aftercare afterwards. The end of the show is not the end of the experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
The relationship doesn't end once the bow happens, right? We are still in relation with one another. And that's my hope with the festival, because it's 5 weekends, that there's an ongoing conversation around how we show up, how we're seeing these works. The fourth weekend is a rotation between Ayudeli Cassell, who's an incredible performer and tap artist, choreographer, high in demand, and on the verge of doing even more incredible things. So I'm so excited we are at this moment together. And then Kayla Farish, who is a younger choreographer with this incredible appetite for movement and intimacy and just getting up into the sweat and the muscularity of that intimacy, right? And so these two performances are going to be in rotation on that weekend because I do want them to be in conversation. I want audiences to have the ability to see them in proximity because those two works are just so dynamic. And because they're still in development, I don't know. It's a hypothesis. So I hope to see how they ignite each other, right? Because on their own terms, stellar, amazing, incredible. So seeing one will be a satisfying experience. And I have this notion that the two together, they're very different dance forms. They're very different artists, but there's something about the intensity and the listening that both these artists bring that I feel is going to be magical.
Oh, well, I am so excited. Oh my goodness. And all of the wonderful programming that is coming in to Katzbahn Annual Festival can be found on katzbahn.org, right? So that's KAATSBAAN.org. And all information for performances and ticketing can be found there. Please, please take part. I will definitely be there for with bells on, but quiet bells. Because I'm a respectful, that's my audience behavior, respectful audience behavior. But I'm just thrilled and so happy that we get to have you. The work that you've described, you're just coming with this wealth of creative history that I think this area is going to be really lucky to have you here for this time.
Thank you so much for having me and letting me meander through my history.
Oh my gosh, a pure joy.
Some hints around the festival, and I hope everybody does really feel comfortable. Some of the shows are ticketed. It was such a joy to put together, and I'm feeling the excitement for us opening on Labor Day weekend.
So, question about these performances that you're getting to see during Katzbahn. Do you ever think about bringing these performances back with you to Montreal, to having these guest artists come to Montreal?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I've always held very close, near and dear to me is my relationship with both countries. And so to be able to be a bridge to these communities and share knowledge and share the resources that I have access to, absolutely. It's always on my mind. And it takes time it is international to cross the border. So it does take a little bit more time to put in. And yeah, absolutely. That's front of mind.
Yay. All right, everyone. Once again, for all information, go to katzbahn.org and I'll see you there. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
She put the scar on the side of his face when he disappeared for 3 days. And they said that they are in love. He took her cocaine when she was asleep. Friends say he gave half away. And they said that they are in love. Run away. this town's destroyed more than one friend of mine. Funny, they never leave. They say that they are in love. Some say it's rotten, some say it's wrong, some say it's hard to believe, and some say that they are in love. Move away.
Hello there, is that Eddie?
Oh, hello, who's that, Professor?
Yeah, man, what's happening there in England?
Oh, damn good to hear you, Helby. Nothing at all, save a boring bloody music on the radio. And you know how one loves one's black music.
I mean, they're playing the same thing that they were playing five years ago.
Same old thing, dear fellow.
Shit. What, so you ain't got no choice on the radio?
Well, no choice is no bloody choice, you know? So, what are you doing at the moment yourself, old fellow?
I've got some new stuff, man. I wanna bring it out. I wanna get it played over there. I think the people ought to hear it. You know?
What is it like? What is it exactly?
Well, you could call it what you like. I don't have a name for it, but it sounds something like this. Have a listen.